This is OTB AM.
Let's tell you something about Nathan now. I think he said the other night, I was listening to his commentary, actually, I got the first half of his commentary the other night. Great reader of a stat, he's just not a great reader of the game. And that's not something that I thought about. I was thinking it when I was driving. I was thinking, he's a great man for a stat, but, oh, come on.
OTB AM, Ireland's only sports breakfast show, weekdays from 7:30 AM, only on OTB Sports Radio. Live 24/7 on the OTB Sports app. The OTB Podcast Network.
The News Round on Off the Ball.
With Gillette, we don't just play the game, we change it. Gillette, made of what matters.
This is News Talk.
Hello there, folks. So, Champions League evening ahead, semi-final. We have Real Madrid against Chelsea. In Madrid, we will check in with Miguel Delaney pre-match. The World Snooker Championship continues. We're at the quarter-final stages. Ken Doherty joins the show after 8 o'clock. Meanwhile, interesting times at Arsenal, of course. Talk of a takeover led by the founder of Spotify. We will focus on the Kroenke era with Andrew Mangan of Arseblog. He's been there, Stan Kroenke, for about 12 years now, had complete ownership for about 3, and not very popular, to say the least. Kate O'Connor is a heptathlete. She is 20 years of age. She put in an Irish record-breaking performance at the weekend. Also on the football show, I'm interested. Maybe you all have no interest in this whatsoever, in which case you can let us know. But Inter Miami, David Beckham's dynasty, well, the Phil Neville era has begun. So journalist Jeff Reuter will join us to talk about the Beckham-Neville season, which has just started over there. 53106, the text number. We're at Off the Ball on Twitter. Big David Beckham fan, Richie McCormack. Hello.
How are you, Joe?
Adrian Barry, hello.
Nobody bigger David Beckham fan than yourself, I think, Joe.
Well, that's true. That's true. I did not push this piece through, by the way. This arrived fully formed, and I said, okay, fine, let's do it, just for the record. But Phil Neville, David Beckham, is kind of interesting. Inter Miami. I was just flicking through the websites there, waiting for the show to start, and I just came across this. Very impressive. Belfast, 12-year-old, sets new 5-kilometre world record for athlete of her age. I'm just seeing this on the 42. Belfast schoolgirl Emer McKee has set a new world record for an athlete of her age. She has run the 5K in 16 minutes, 40 seconds. Thank you very much. That's quite impressive. 16 minutes, 40, 5K, 12 years of age. There's a picture of her running by a couple of adults, I'll bet. So good on her. That's apropos of nothing. I just happened to see that before I came on air. It struck me as a good time, Adrian.
Joe, are you familiar with the name Mattia Binotto?
I am, of course, not.
He's the team principal at Ferrari Formula One team, at which I'm currently an expert because I'm nearly at the end of Drive to Survive, which is an incredible series. But you really have gone full Mattia Binotto with your hair.
Yeah, but, no, it's not in a great place.
I recommend do a quick Google over there at some point, but it's...
Yeah.
You're hair twins.
No, and I've shoved it down. I mean, my options are slap a load of gel on a teenage disco style or else just like look like I do. But there we are. You and everyone else watching this show. So Paul Kimmage yesterday
was... I had to bring you up there. You've gone a little bit Keith Andrews, all right.
Yeah. Yeah. Now I'm more receding around the fringes. I mean, I'll be exposed when I get my hair cut again. But at the moment, plenty of volume. You and everyone else watching this bloody thing, Adrian. I'm going to have to watch it. I started watching it this morning, actually, because even Paul Kimmage was writing about it on Sunday, where he was harking back to the glory days of Eddie Jordan. You know, he's a bit of a relationship with Jordan, interviewed him a good few times and had lost touch, I think, with Formula One, but was mentioning his kids were watching Drive to Survive.
Yeah, it's really addictive.
And he started watching it as well. He said, yeah. And I think viewing figures are on the up as a result, aren't they? Of the actual races.
I've only started watching in the last 3 weeks or thereabouts. Yeah. And we'll definitely be watching some Grand Prix off the back of it. Well, hopefully getting some time to watch some Grand Prix off the back of it. But it's brilliant. It is obviously the thing that put me off it, because it's existed for the last few years, I think. Was that essentially it was a documentary about Formula One. And, like, I mean, is there anything more of a turnoff than a documentary about Formula One? But once you start to watch it, it really is a well put together show. It is access all areas. I believe that it has to get cleared at some point. So even the in-depth conversation you get to look at need to get cleared by the teams at some level. But, like, they really are whole hog on the conversations that are happening behind the scenes, and that's the biggest attraction of it. Like, it is obviously about Formula One, but at the same time, it's really more about human dynamics, I suppose.
Oh, very good. Well, I did watch the very first episode of season one. There are three seasons, and the first episode profiles Daniel Ricciardo.
Ricciardo, yeah.
Sorry, yeah, I'm all over the shop with that pronunciation. But and it seemed, you know, it seemed decent. It seemed okay, and it was a decent insight into who he is. Mm. I had just presumed that the access would be sanitized around the big personalities, but I'm hearing other things. So now I'm in. Now I'm interested.
Yeah. So they Hamilton didn't appear at all in season one, nor any of his colleagues, and then suddenly there was loads of them in season two. They've gone off a little bit again in season three, but no, it's brilliant. Like, I mean, I found myself without sort of ruining it on anybody, but there was like one of the main sort of people who follow Formula One obviously know this stuff inside out, but for those who are sort of approaching it in a kind of an EastEnders type of way, which is, I suppose, really where I was coming from, in that I knew nothing really about the sport, hadn't been away, like you were saying there, Joe, for whatever, the guts of 20 years probably. Yeah. Like, I found myself last night, I was having my wife watching on the couch, and I was like building up to, was this person going to be kept on at this team, or was this other driver coming in? And, you know, I touted the guy going out that there's no way he's going to make it. He's definitely getting ditched. And then this other guy goes on and wins one of the Grand Prix, and the phone rings, and it's the guy, the team principal at that team, going, hey, such and such, welcome to whatever team it was. And it was just, it's really well shot. It's really well put together. They do deliberately take you on the highs and lows. Like, they really put you through the ringer in a way that, like, they latch on to the stories brilliantly. And I don't know, maybe they're just shooting loads and loads and loads of interviews, and most of it ends up in the cutting room floor, and then they're just honing in on the stories that emerge throughout that specific Grand Prix as being, having been the main points of narrative. But there's really great stuff in there about, like, you know, how like a Formula One career is just so full of jeopardy. You're hot today and cold tomorrow, and like, obviously the crashes are less, but there are still, like, season three, there's a pretty horrific episode where a driver is in a really bad situation, but comes through it, obviously. And it's really well put together now, I have to say, but they do go about it in a quite a dramatic way, that they know they're taking the viewer on that journey. I'd be really interested to know if anybody watching or listening tonight and are a really hardcore Formula One fan, I'd really be interested to know what they think about it. You know, I'd say there could be a bit of I'd say a lot of hardcore Formula One fans maybe looking down their noses at it a bit.
Right. Have you watched it, Rich?
I haven't yet. No, it's one of those things where I kind of have to find the time around the evenings to watch it. But, like, I'd actually disagree with Adrian on as regards the Formula One documentary premise being boring, because if anything, it does lend itself to documentary format and kind of condensing all the good parts into the space of an hour. It's Formula One, because the characters that are around it are usually pretty interesting, pretty colourful, going back years and even still are now. The action you can obviously condense into, you know, nice sellable chunks and all that kind of stuff. And, like, the stories and mythology around F1 in and of themselves are fantastic. One of my favourite sports books ever is a Formula One book. It's Malcolm Foley's book about the rivalry between Prost and Senna, which goes deeper than the documentary even managed to do. So it's one of these things whereby it's like, aesthetically, it's a really beautiful sport. It's just a lot of the edge, like, I know we're talking about there still being crashes and there's still being incidents, but a lot of the edge has been taken away from it through a combination of safety, which is obviously needed, and also it being put behind a paywall over the course of the last few years too. So people's access to it and people's involvement with it isn't necessarily the same as it would have been when Murray Walker was screaming the names of Nelson Piquet, Nigel Mansell, Damon Hill et al. Whereas now it's tucked away a little bit, takes an effort for people to find it, and it is something that's usually now preserved for the diehards.
Yeah, no, I started watching the first episode today, so I'll definitely stick with it, because we do get it recommended by texters on a routine basis anytime Formula One comes up. John in Drumcondra texts in to say, Formula One now, snooker later, really is a night for the old school sports fans on OTB this evening. It is. Ken Doherty on the way after 8 o'clock. I recorded this chat, full disclosure, with Ken earlier on. We're at the quarterfinal stage now. Of the eight who have reached the quarterfinals, I think we have five, if not six, our previous champions. But just chatting to Ken about the difference in standard with now and, say, the 90s, he was making the point that in the 1990s, a significant number of players who won big tournaments went through their career and managed maybe 100 centuries across their career. He said the current batch, and I know the current batch have been around a while, but the better players still playing now manage 100 centuries in a season. which is kind of an extraordinary leap when you think about the quality. So that's on the way after 8 o'clock with Ken Doherty. On that 5K time I mentioned, that's quicker than Shane Hannon, says somebody. Well, indeed, indeed, you know.
That's saying something.
It is, yeah. Public service announcement, says somebody else. While on the topic of sports documentaries, the ESPN 30 for 30s have been uploaded to Disney Plus. Some quality ones in there. Is that right?
Oh, you've made my millennium with that now.
Oh, yeah.
That's good. Yeah, if I can recommend one there, obviously everybody knows the OJ one. But the one, it's, I think it's a 5-part series on the rivalry between the Lakers and the Celtics, is magnificent. That Showtime Lakers era with Magic Johnson and Kareem Abdul-Jabbar and so on and so forth, and Larry Bird's Celtics, and everything that went into the building of that rivalry as well. It's just magnificent.
There's a lot of good ones. I always thought Once Brothers was really touching. That was about the split in Yugoslavia and two, you know, the rivalries. Once Brothers, I guess, sums it up. And then obviously they became very much rivals. It was really good. Disney Plus, I mean, I'm paying for Netflix, paying for Amazon at the moment, Disney Plus, I can't quite extend.
Golf Weekly, Joe. I mean, it's all these.
Yeah. Spotify, speaking of Spotify, Arsenal fans should be worried. The guy from Spotify considering buying the club. If you go by the money artists receive on that platform, they'll be signing non-league players, says Owen. Yeah, we're going to talk to Andrew Mangan of Arsblog later on, because I was just making the point on the news round last week. I know you were on, Rich, with Nathan, that initially I thought the Glazers would be under most pressure, but then the more I thought about it, at least the Glazers are still keeping United competitive and spending 80 million on Maguire and 60 million on Fernandes. Like, Arsenal finished 8th last year, they're 10th or something in the Premier League now. The Kroenke era has just been a disaster, and he doesn't seem to want to spend much of his own money. But as Andrew will explain on the football show, it's more mismanagement behind the scenes post Wenger. Wenger goes in 2018. That's the same year Kroenke gets complete control of Arsenal. And it's hard to feel those vacuums because Wenger had done so much, and they've had various efforts to try and put a backroom department together. You know, Sven Mislintat came in from Dortmund and he was meant to be the head of recruitment, and they had Raul Sagnelli, and they had even Gazidis who left, and then they've all disappeared, and Edu's in there now. And it just seems like they've made a mess of things, like signing, you know, Pepe is their record signing of 70 million and they end up spending crazy money on Ozil. A lot of players walk out on free contracts, free transfers rather. It just seems like it's not being well run. Kroenke's not going to sell, I think, is the word. So we don't have to worry too much about the Swedish Spotify founder, Daniel Ek. $3 billion to his name. Spotify. Why didn't I think of Spotify, Adrian?
This is the guy who applied for a job in Google, if I'm right, and they turned him down. So he went, all right, well, this is what he was. I think he was still in college at the time, and he said, all right, screw you, I'm going to set up my own search engine. So it's not a guy that takes no for an answer. Philip O'Clair was on with the lads on HBAM earlier, and he was talking about, like, sort of care for what you wish for. And there is, you said, did you say he was worth $3 billion, Joe? Is that what you said?
Yeah.
And Arsenal themselves are $2 billion, something like that. So, like, it's a good chunk of, like, I often wonder about these guys, like, how many billion do you need to have before you decide that you're effectively... I mean, they don't all waste money on football clubs, obviously. And it does bring up an interesting conversation about supporters and who they actually want owning their club. Mm. You know, like a rich fool. It seems a rich fool seems to be the shorthand for what most supporters would like, in that somebody that will come in and be happy to shell out $1 billion and more, and be happy to lose it, which isn't the most sustainable model, clearly.
I don't think Daniel would be spending his own $2 billion somehow, and I don't think he'd be paying the interest on the loan either. Interestingly, he went with the old tweet over the weekend. As a kid growing up, I've cheered for Arsenal as long as I can remember. If KSE, that's the Kroenke company, would like to sell Arsenal, I'd be happy to throw my hat in the ring. Now, somebody went and had a look. Not that Twitter is everything, but they had a glance at his Twitter. Doesn't follow Arsenal Football Club on Twitter, has never followed an Arsenal player, and in the past decade has tweeted about Arsenal twice. So if that's beloved...
Not a great sign.
Yeah, I don't know. We should start the news round. It is, as ever, with thanks to our good friends at Gillette, who are sponsoring the news round, and I've lost the tagline. I was trying to fill time.
Made of what matters, Joe. Made of what matters.
Damn it. I'm giving that the big sell. The news round is with thanks to Gillette. We don't just play the game, we change it, of course. Gillette, made of what matters. So you're starting, Richie, with news on Johnny Sexton. Not good news.
Yeah, he's been ruled out of Leinster's Heineken Champions Cup semi-final with La Rochelle this Sunday. The Ed half is still observing the return to play protocols, having sustained a head injury in their quarter-final win over Exeter. That was nearly 3 weeks ago now. Caelan Doris remains a doubt due to the calf injury that saw him withdraw from the side to play Munster. Jemison Gibson-Park and Harry Byrne will also be assessed ahead of Sunday's game in France. La Rochelle head coach Ronan O'Gara, of course, has a unique understanding of Irish rugby, as does the ex-Leinster and Ulster coach John O'Gibbs, now above O'Gara for now, of course, at La Rochelle. And Devon Toner says that's something to be wary of come Sunday.
Yeah, I think naturally it's going to have an influence, obviously, because Jono is the coach and he has some insider knowledge about us. But saying that, it's a fair few years ago now that he was here. There's only a handful of players that he will know still. But again, I'm sure he's done all his video analysis and kind of, he's probably watched us over the years. I think he does have experience as well when he was coaching Claremont against us as well. So he will know our strengths and he'll know our weaknesses. So, but saying that, he's not going to be out on the pitch. He's just going to obviously be telling the other lads what to do. So it's just down to us to match it, I suppose. So like he will have some influence, but hopefully not too much.
That game is on Sunday, of course. We'll have live commentary for you here and off the ball, promptly followed at full time by commentary of Liverpool against Manchester United. So a really good Sunday afternoon here on off the ball. Adrian, your chat with Ronan on Friday just gone, I think, as he gets ready to take over as director of rugby and in control of everything on the back of John O'Gibbs' departure. It was pretty clear Ronan O'Gara still wants to remain very much a quote-unquote training ground manager. That will be his priority.
I think it's going to be, it is. I think it's going to be very difficult for him. I think that he's going to be taking on a lot of duties and he's fully aware of all this. He was chatting through it, as you say, on Friday. There'll be a lot of stuff coming his way that he maybe doesn't even expect in terms of the role that John O'Gibbs would have been fulfilling and the administrative aspect of that. I was sort of asking him in the context of bringing in any new coaches, which got a good laugh out of him, which I'm assuming means that there is somebody planned it somewhere down the track. So we'll see about that, but he's really clearly loving life in France. I was actually happened to be in that same neck of the woods a couple of years ago for our summer holidays, and it is beautiful. Mm. It is. I could easily see why you would spend a little bit of time there, and not be mad about moving home anytime soon. But he's got a great setup and looking to put down roots for a while. And like Sunday's game is going to be interesting. Like we've got a great look. It's such a shame that top 14 isn't available. Isn't it like that? We could just get a bit more look. I think the Irish audiences for it would be big if we could get easy access to it. But it's not easy got at the minute.
I wonder that. You know, I think the Irish rugby fan, there is a core who love their rugby for sure, and then there's, I'd say, a fairly sizable majority. I'd say majority. I'm basing this on not much anecdotal feel for things, who watch the Irish provinces, whichever one they support, and Ireland, and aren't watching a huge amount beyond that.
You could be right. I would probably, I'm only speaking for my own thing, but I would probably watch some of his games. You know, there's Irish interest elsewhere as well. I would have watched a bit more Racing if they'd been available maybe over the last couple of seasons.
Will you watch the other Heineken Champions Cup semi-final this Saturday?
What time? It probably depends on what time it's at, Joe.
3 o'clock Saturday.
3 o'clock. Yeah, I'll try to. Yeah, I know what you're saying. If you're not watching that, then you're not going to be watching the other.
But you wouldn't miss the Champions League semi-final, which is where we're going to in soccer. You know, but the equivalent. Yeah. I don't know.
But the thing about rugby people, like you'll see on Saturday mornings in particular, like there's a lot of people watching Super Rugby, and people who are into rugby will watch that. And it's a case of like, it's just a case of, I guess, for rugby fans. Not necessarily for your, you know, coming in off the street and wondering who's playing on TV, but for people who are actually following it is a surprise that it isn't carried anywhere. I know Eurosport, I think, have it over in France. But I don't know. Sure, maybe, who knows, we can get it on otbsports.com one day, Adrian.
Good shout, Richie. I think that like the O'Gara attraction is like that he's basically as close as rugby has to Roy Keane, probably, not just the Cork thing. Like he's...
Yeah.
Obviously got that type of a character about him, and I think that's the attraction of it. That's and they play good rugby, obviously, is the other thing with La Rochelle.
No, for sure, but I guess that extends almost the parochial point that we would watch La Rochelle because of Rog. For instance, would you be sitting down to watch Bordeaux against Claremont?
No. Sorry, okay. I wasn't at all suggesting that I would sit down and watch the top 14 in any great league.
All right, okay.
Other than watching him Azebo is obviously gone now, but like that sort of thing, where there's a couple of Irish, bit of Irish interest, I would be definitely more inclined to look at it. But no, I wouldn't be for 1 second suggesting that I would be carving out hours of my week to watch some of that other stuff. No.
Yeah, fair enough. So, well, we mentioned Champions League semi-finals. Real Madrid against Chelsea. We have team news.
Yeah, it's a rare meeting of the sides. Their last meeting in a cup competition, apart from his Super Cup, came 50 years ago in the Cup Winners' Cup final in Piraeus. For Real, Thibaut Courtois starts in goal. They've then got a back three of Eder Militao, Rafael Varane and Nacho. Dani Carvajal and Marcelo provide the width, while the old stages of Luka Modric, Casemiro and Toni Kroos are in midfield, with Vinicius Jr. and Karim Benzema up front for them. For Chelsea, pretty similar formation, actually. Edouard Mendy starts in goal. A back three then of Andreas Christensen, Thiago Silva and Tony Rudiger, with Cesar Azpilicueta and Ben Chilwell the wing backs. N'Golo Kante and Jorginho sit in midfield. In front of them, the trio of Christian Pulisic and Mason Mount, who are in support of Turner. Kickoff at the Alfredo Di Stefano Stadium is at 8 p.m.
Yeah, interesting team news there. So it seems Zidane, who's not generally renowned as a tactician, has matched up Chelsea. We'll talk to Miguel Delaney in about 10 minutes time. Punchestown, of course, started today.
Yeah, and it's been all Willie Mullins pretty much today. He claimed all three grade ones on the opening day of the festival. Paul Townend capped his return from injury by guiding favourite Shaqan Pourswat to victory in the day's feature, the William Hill Champion Chase. The Rachel Blackmore mount of Alaho was 5.5 lengths back in second. 7-1 shot Kulrivi upset the favourites to win the Dooley Insurance Group Champion Novice Chase under jockey Davy Mullins, while Envoy Allen was pulled up by Blackmore before the second last in that one. And Patrick Mullins rode the odds-on favourite Echoes in Rain to victory in the Ecom Merchant Solutions Champion Novice Hurdle.
There's a text in saying, of course, the Formula One documentary has made you interested in Formula One again. That is the point. It's the new form of marketing in these shiny documentaries. I don't know. Well, yes, I'm sure they're hoping it would attract interest. But I think, Adrian, the surprise for me is actually it puts together something where not everybody emerges as, you know, great character, great fella. You get to see a bit of the dirty side of things, which doesn't tend to come in the officially approved documentaries. I mean, like, I sat down to watch whatever they're called on Amazon, the behind the scenes documentaries, the Juventus one. I just have to turn it off after 5 minutes. You can just sniff a marketing ploy as opposed to a genuine effort to make a documentary a mile off. This seems to be a bit more of the latter.
It needed a lot of buy-in, and I think that's why season one that Mercedes didn't feature that heavily in it, because I think they were like, well, we're a bit suspicious. We don't really want to do anything that's going to jeopardize our inevitable championship, which it still is to a degree. And I think that's why they were a bit standoffish initially, and then they come on. Even something like the sequence at the start of the show, opening sequence, where it was a red team, I think a non-bespoke red team all the way through, that would appear. And then from that season on, then suddenly you start to see all the different colours of the teams appear in a way that I think they all started to, I think it was significant in that it showed that they were all kind of buying into it a bit more. Like there really is, and there are many reasons why you won't ever get the full absolutes of everything that's going on behind the scenes. Like, but you do get a lot. You really do. Like there's, you know, drivers getting, losing their seats, and there's a lot of, like a huge amount of detail being shared around that, even to the point there was the Williams head technician, I think he was, a guy called Paddy Lowe in season two, and he's Williams don't turn up like the 2 days late for the testing or something like that, and there's a really tense scene between him and the de facto CEO Claire Williams, and it's really tense, like, and they show all that, and like it's very obvious he kind of comes over and he's like, Claire, how was your flight? And she's like barely acknowledging his comment. Like it's a real deep insight. Yeah. Like that obviously went before somebody after that scene where they went, well, can we show this? Like, we really want to show this. And they allowed it in. And like, so you do get a lot of that. I actually think, Joe, I looking at it, I hope that other like associations and governing bodies look at it and go, actually, it's not so bad if you let the cameras see a little bit more.
Yes. Totally agree. Richie has dropped out, unfortunately, due to technical problems. So I'll pick up the baton. Don't judge me, everyone, as I make an effort here. Mark Selby has finished the afternoon session. This is in the snooker, obviously, with a 6-2 lead over Mark Williams in their World Championship quarterfinal at the Crucible. We are at the quarterfinal stages. On the other table, Judd Trump and Sean Murphy are evenly split. They're 4 frames apiece. Neil Robertson's just resumed 5-3 up, and Kyron Wilson, while Anthony McGill, who did beat Ronnie O'Sullivan in the second round, and Stuart Bingham are tied at 4 frames apiece. Aidan O'Shea then expected to be fit for Mayo's Connacht football quarterfinal with Sligo. The Brafey man was sent for a scan last week and a knee injury sustained during Mayo's first group training session of the year. Scans, though, have not revealed any ligament damage, meaning O'Shea avoids a lengthy spell on the sideline, which is good news for Mayo. We have Katie Taylor in action at the weekend. Natasha Jonas, who Taylor beat at the Olympics in 2012 and beat well, she says she is determined to make Katie Taylor, quote, look human on Saturday, end quote. The pair meet in Manchester. Taylor, undisputed lightweight title, that is on the line. Jonas lost to Taylor, as I said, in both of their previous encounters in the amateur circuit, the most recent in the quarterfinal at London 2012. There was a pretty big gap between the pair then. So here is Natasha Jonas hoping that third time is a charm.
I love it when people tell me that I can't, because I love proving them that I can. I love proving people wrong, and I love proving other people right. Me and Joe were saying it before the Harper fight. There's nothing that she does that's better than me. And nobody believed us. And I was saying, okay, we'll see. And that's exactly the same for this fight. Okay, you don't believe it. I don't need you to see it. I don't need you to believe it. But I'm telling you, you'll see.
Saturday night, there we go, Adrian. A few pieces in the papers on Sunday noting she's very much an MTK fighter, Jonas. It's hard to avoid that, I think. MTK are so big.
Yeah, and that in itself is obviously a shame that we have to be talking about it in that context, but that we should point it out. But there's been the fights that happened during lockdown from Eddie Hearn's backyard. She was on a lot of the coverage, particularly around some of those Taylor fights, and it was always in the context of how would you go against her. And interesting to hear there say that she's going to make Katie Taylor look human. I mean, you know, there are other fighters who've done that. It's not as if she's totally sailed through all of her fights, particularly against some of the better opposition. So, you know, she's going to get beaten sometime, and Natasha Jonas is a quality fighter, so yeah, we'll watch that for sure.
Michael and Kerry's texted in, there are a lot more snooker tournaments these days, which is part of the reason for more century breaks. Absolutely, Michael, and Ken Doherty makes that point after 8 o'clock, but certainly the standard has improved as well. Still no Richie with us, so I'm going to dive back in. Bayern Munich have confirmed Julian Nagelsmann will be their head coach from next season. We all expected this. 33 years of age. Oh my God. It's upsetting. It is upsetting.
are you thinking about that in terms of, Jesus, my coaching career is never going to take off?
I'm 35. I spent a lot of my 20s sort of thinking I could still make it. You know what I mean? I'm still just about young enough. And now I've let that ship sail. Same age as Johnny Sexton. I cheer him on.
To the point, Joel, where I'm looking at, I was thinking about this one yesterday. I can't remember what exactly I was looking at, but I'm nearly there. I'm not quite. I'm getting to a stage where there almost aren't any referees as old as I am. Yeah. That's how bad I'm getting.
Well, Nagelsmann, it is, in fairness, extraordinary. 33 years of age, has just taken over now at Bayern Munich. 5-year deal, succeeds Hansi Flick, of course, who departs at the end of the season and is on the cusp of succeeding Yogi Löw. So that is the situation over in Germany. Premiership then. The English Premiership has confirmed an agreement has been reached for the release of players to the Lions squad. Players who are based in England and selected by Warren Gatland will be available for that Lions warm-up game against Japan and any training camp as well ahead of that. With the tour impacting on the Premiership season, the two sides had previously been unable to find a solution, but they've managed to do that now. Wimbledon's traditional middle Sunday day of rest will be scrapped from next year, moving the tennis championship to a 14-day event. And we have very interesting story this as well. Last night's Premier League match between Leicester and Crystal Palace paused after half an hour to allow two Muslim players who are fasting for Ramadan to eat and drink. We had Wesley Fofana and Sheku Kouate of Crystal Palace took advantage of a pause in play to take on energy gels. The stoppage, it happened once the sun had set, in accordance with Ramadan rules, was agreed during a pre-match captain's meeting with the referee, Graham Scott, believed to be the first time this has happened in a Premier League game. Really interesting. This happened in Turkey a couple of weeks ago. I don't know if you saw the pictures, Adrian. It's kind of extraordinary. The sun went down and obviously quite a few Muslim players on both sides, and they all went over to the sideline and started drinking some water and energy gels and having some nuts at a pause in play. It is extraordinary that professional athletes can do this. Like Mo Salah and Sané did it, I remember, in advance of that Champions League final against Spurs, and Klopp was saying he was more than happy for them to do it, and you know, some things are more important than football. But that they can function at such a high level fasting from sunrise to sunset. Quite extraordinary. There's something lovely and inclusive about that last night, isn't there?
That's brilliant, Jack, because Fofana had to come off early in the previous game, hadn't he? Because Rodgers was saying that he was effectively, understandably, out of energy,
yes,
given that he couldn't take anything on board all day, so they had to get him off early. So it's far more preferable than that. It's absolute common sense. I can't see that anybody... You'd want to be going out of your way to be a bit of a... You know, you want to be going out of your way to object to that, wouldn't you? Like, I mean, I think that it's great and it's inclusive, and finding a way to accommodate people with beliefs like that, should be encouraged.
Yeah. Add off the ball, 5-3-1-6. We won't be long waiting. Don't worry, Adrian. So that is the news round done. Thanks to Richie, who's obviously had some technical problems. Thank you, Adrian. Appreciate it.
Well done. Well done, you, Joe. Well done.
Thank you. We have Ken Doherty at 8. We have Andrew Mangan talking Stan Kroenke after 9. And Champions League semi-final preview with Miguel Delaney next.
The news round on Off the Ball.
With Gillette. We don't just play the game, we change it. Gillette. Made of what matters.
That was an OTB Podcast Network presentation.